Preston and Steve Fun Size Podcast.
Steve, I was looking for Papa, can you hear me? Or Poppy, do you hear me? From Yentl.
Yes.
To play. And
we don't have it.
I don't have it.
For I got it.
I thought you we had the entire Yentl soundbook.
You do have it?
I do.
Okay, because I was going to play Papa Don't Preach. Or...
Oh, is this a big lead in?
Does it take a while to get to the part?
Is she reading from the Torah?
Our Heavenly Father.
Oh, Jesus.
I heard a little Papa there. Oh, God. All right, stop that.
Wait, we'll get to the part where she mentions Netflix.
I'm going to do this. How about Papa's a Rolling
Stone? There we go.
Yeah, right. Let's do that. All right. His Netflix special, You're Doing Great, is out now, and we love having him on. He's going to be in town, actually, on March 7th at the Keswick Theater. Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Papa.
Yeah!
Hey, Tom.
Papa, can you hear me? Papa, can you hear?
That's much better.
Yeah,
than
we should have had you do it.
Yeah. How you doing, man?
Guys?
We're doing well.
Good to hear you. I miss you guys.
Well, you're going to be in town in a little while, but you've got big news, the Netflix special, which I love so much so that I've been ordered to wait till the weekend to watch it with my wife. So, because we're both huge fans. Is at this point in this storied career that you have, this is still a big thing, right? A special like this, especially on Netflix.
Yeah, it's huge. You know, you do it and you tour around. You know, for the last 2.5 years, I've been working on this act, and you know, people like it a lot when I'm touring and stuff. But then to put it out in front of people who maybe don't know you and a much, much bigger worldwide audience, it's like you just there's always that little insecurity in you as a comedian, like, oh, no one's going to like me.
But that's probably what spurs you on a bit, you know, because you want to reach that audience, and certainly Netflix provides the form for that. I was reading an interview with you, and you said that this is the first time you've kind of stuck thematically through an entire show of yours on sort of one concept. And what made you want to do that?
Yeah, it was just as I was touring, I got this feeling, which we all haven't, even not from touring, just that people are anxious and people have this feeling like they're working hard and they're doing all the right things and they're taking care of their family but it's not enough. Everyone has this feeling like they should be doing more or be better, and they're looking at other people's lives on social media and they think that their life pales in comparison. And I was like, You got to realize, folks, if you stop looking at the news and you stop opening up your stupid phone, you're actually doing pretty great.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, and to be obsessed with it, look, it's not that it's an easy thing. We're the first human beings that have to deal with this onslaught of information. But you've got to realize if you're busy feeling anxious and watching the news and getting pissed off, your years are flying by you. And you're not having any fun.
Oh, my God. You've nailed it, man. You've nailed it. So, and the word I like to use is toxic. I've reeled it way, way back because I realized it wasn't doing me any good.
No, you've got to manage it. And I started saying on stage, you're doing great. You're doing great. And after shows, people were coming up to me and sincerely saying, thank you for saying that. I've really been feeling like things aren't so bad for me, and I'm working hard for my family, and thank you for saying it. So it just became the theme, and I just kept hammering it. And I was like, you know what? Why does comedy have to be really negative and cynical? I don't live that way. I'm pretty optimistic and hopeful. And I was like, well, let me make this special a little more sincere and a little more positive and upbeat and give people a little break from all of the river of garbage that they have to digest every day.
Well, I think it's a confluence of things. I think now there's people are being taught that they only have worth if they're a victim. You know, that they can't just say, "Hey, I'm pretty happy. I'm you know, there's some things I have these things in my life, but I also have these positive things, and it's okay to celebrate that and not feel that be embarrassed that you can look at life and look at the positives. And then, as you said, social media, which sets an incredibly protracted, bizarre, you know, you're seeing people many times through filters at their best moments, having the best meals of their lives in the best locations. And it's like, oh, man, I'm not doing that right now.
And it's a lie. No one has a great life. No one. I say in the special that, like, they're posting their best moments. It's like just to make you feel bad. I mean, they look at us at the Eiffel Tower. We're in Paris. Yeah, they don't show them for the a post on their Instagram of them sitting in the hotel for 5 days because the husband's got diarrhea from a French tardy she could be eating.
Right.
It's true. Yeah. It's true.
But that's happening too.
Yeah, yeah. So as far as you go, and you hit a whole bunch of topics, which we're going to get into, but as far as you on social media, which has to be a part of, I mean, you're you know, an entertainer. You've got to facilitate it. Do you have any self-imposed rules about how you handle it and how often you're on it?
No, but I kind of screwed myself up because I have a 14-year-old, and I put her on screen time, which is a way to control how many hours she's on her phone. And we got in a little bit of a fight, and I cut them way back, so she's very limited on social media now. What I didn't realize when I did it is I put myself on it, too, and I have since forgotten the password. And there's no way to reset it. You have to, like, hard reset the whole phone, and I'll lose all this information. So I'm trying to tweet about my special, and I'm, like, racing against time to get the post out. And my daughter's just sitting there, like, with a cigarette on the other end of the room, like, not too fun, is it?
Well, we follow you, obviously, on both Twitter and Instagram, and so you're doing that, and the word is getting out, but. So now that you've done it and you're addressing all these issues, the response has been great. People have seen it, love it. Of the special and all the topics hit, which was the one you were just itching to talk about the most?
Oh, man. You know what it was? The good old days. I'm so sick and tired of all of these people walking around in the culture, living in an amazing time. This is an amazing time that we are fortunate enough to be alive. And these people are saying, well, if we could just go back to the good old days, if we could just get out of this time and go, are you kidding me? It was hell back then.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, we are so lucky. We don't even know how to do stuff yet. And this is so much better. I mean,
yeah. No.
I said in the special, have you ever seen the first bicycle ever made? I mean, I don't know how you make anything, but I know you don't take the smallest wheel you can find and put that in the back. And the biggest wheel on earth, and put that up front.
It's good old days.
We actually drove. We had a couple of those here.
Yeah, they're called the penny farthing.
Penny farthings. Uh-huh. And
they're hard to ride.
Preston took a spin at it and nearly snapped his neck.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone was okay with dying on those things. So your life expectancy in the good old days was 28 years old.
Yes. Well, the truth of the matter is also throughout history, that has always been uttered by one generation for the other. Just people start to say the good old days. And I assume, you know, just after the bubonic plague swept through Europe, people were saying, oh, remember the good old days, you know, back to that. It's always, they always put it in context. But every time yields great times. As you said to your special, you're doing okay. Yeah, you just have to put it in context and see the forest for the trees, as they say.
Yeah, look, I don't pretend that we can all walk around, you know, you see all these Buddhist monks saying, like, you know, live in the moment and live for today. Yeah, but, you know, it's impossible to walk around and just be grateful all the time. And I just want, we've got work to do. We've got stuff to do, and we've got shows we want to watch. You know, we're living in the modern world.
Bread to make.
I do believe if you could take just like 5 minutes and be like, take a deep breath. Oh, I'm okay.
Yeah.
This is all right. Everything's cool. I'm working hard. Could I be better? Sure. But a simple life is what wins, and this is okay. And then you run down to the bar, you do some Jack Daniel shots.
Exactly.
So, Tom, I'm not asking you to be a prognosticator, but, you know, if you could predict, do you think we're headed in the Black Mirror direction of addiction to cell phones and technology, or are we going to wise up at some point and be like, you know what, these are nice tools, and every now and then I want to check in on whatever future version of Instagram exists, or are we just going to be, like, more and more addicted to our phones?
I don't know. You know, it's a weird thing. Like, you watch the younger generation, and they use it in a better way. Like, they're obsessed, too, but they're just better at it. You know, like, when we look at a phone, mm-hmm. and you're making 12 mistakes just to get a text out, and then you go down this rabbit hole, I think that's just because we're just older and dumber. And I do feel like we are collectively all using this information and moving forward at an accelerated rate. Like all, we're all digesting all of this information and turning it into positive stuff and moving forward. And that is something that's changing us and hopefully bringing us into this cooler future. But it doesn't mean that there's not a negativity about it, and it can be manipulated and you have to control it. So short answer, I think by the end of this year, we will all be time traveling.
Okay.
Well, you know.
And wearing robes.
You always have to wear robes like the Eloy in the time. I'll say this, is that ultimately, and I remember it was social media. Well, I saw it on Facebook. It must be true or whatever. And then now we're in a point where we know, you know, everyone starts to get wise to the, yeah, the issues inherent in these things. And that's just a growth process, you know?
Right.
And I, exactly. So I think you're right. We'll vet everything. I think just in, by nature, you know, a lot of people just don't jump on a something that they see and go for it whole hog these days, 'cause it's too often inaccurate. But that said, yeah, I mean, have you seen those, like the Boston Dynamics, the robotic dogs and all those things? And
oh, God. Yeah,
tell me that doesn't scare the F out of you.
Yeah, no, I scare me. I want to get one and ride it around the house.
you want one in your house?
My God, he's got a different.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I keep trying to ride my black lab and not having it.
The robot has a better load bear. Yeah.
yeah. Hey. No, but I am optimistic. I do think that, you know, it's unsettling. The hardest part, and I think the reason why people were responding to my act all over the last 2 years was, it is, we are changing, and change is upsetting, and we're definitely not going to be the same. Things are changing, and, you know, it's like in your life, when change happens, it's unsettling. Like, when you have to move, it's the worst week of your life. It's like everything's packed up, everything's being shipped, you don't know where to find the toaster, either you can't find a spoon, everything's weird.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's what we're going through now, and it doesn't mean that we're not going to end up in a nice house at the end of it. But it's definitely, the ground is shifting.
You're spot on. Spot on.
It may be end times for all we know, because it looks like your podcast just had its 666th episode.
yeah, I know. I definitely saw that as an omen.
You know that
special come out and Satan's numbers all over you.
does that number for you? So there are some people we talked about on the air many times who, if they're at the store buying something at $6.66, they'll buy something else just so that number doesn't come up.
No. Look, I'm in show business. If I can make a secret deal with the devil,
I'm spoken like a true. Yes, a true entertainer. You got to make that deal. You do the show with Fortune Feimster, and she is she's awesome. We've had her on the show here. She just seems like super cool to hang out with, and as a co-host, how could you possibly do better?
Yeah, I love her, and you know, when Sirius Netflix asked me to do this show, they asked who I would want to do it with, and they had a list of potential names that they had been thinking of, and Fortune was one of them, and I just knew immediately. She just makes me laugh. I just get around her and I feel better. And I was like, oh, I could riff with her forever. So I pretended that I interviewed her, but I just called her and said, let's do it.
I hate to you know, like she does, you know, she's, I hate to make this connection because I don't mean it this way, but she has the same sort of energy and comedy. The ability to make you laugh the way you just said, as say a Chris Farley would. You know, they're just naturally, they've got that thing, and she does as well. So,
yeah. And why do you don't want to do the Farley thing? Because they're both big boned. Yeah.
Exactly.
Although, right.
It's the comedic,
that's the
chops.
Part.
Yes. Yeah.
The hardest part. The hardest part about doing a morning show with her is that if anybody brings any kind of food near the studio, she's going to eat it, and then she starts nodding out like an infant at the table.
I watched a special actually with my wife and my two daughters. It got to a certain point where we had to turn it off because it just wasn't appropriate for us to watch with our children. But I was saying to my wife that she has actually one of my favorite jokes by any stand-up comedian ever. And the best part about it, and we had her in the studio and I asked her about it, the best part about that joke is that it's not even a joke. It's something that actually had happened to her in real life, and it was just a funny thing. And it was like before she really even knew she was gay, she was jealous of her friends, like boyfriends. Right. And you know, her mom's asking her, like, why do you care so much about, you know, Jenny's Jenny, who's Jenny's dating? And she's like, because she's my best friend. and so I know you as a comic, I'm sure some of your best stuff or all of your best stuff is stuff that is real to life.
Yeah, no, exactly. If that stuff, for some reason, and it's one of those things like why, like a home-baked good is better than like a commercial thing. There's definitely a little bit of your soul in it. It makes it a little deeper. If it's real, there's more layers to it, I think, so it resonates more. There's just more to it. And, yeah, I fortunately, I wasn't born a lesbian, so.
Yeah, but you do like women, and that's
that's true.
I'll say this, and honestly, this the you are so effortless and so perfect on stage. You're just one of the absolute best, and you're you know, again, everything is so. It comes across your delivery is again. I put you in like the Bill Burr. It just flows, you know. You're at that level, and obviously Jerry Seinfeld's a fan of yours. Was there ever a time in your stand-up career where you were, as is described, like hacky, or you know, did you hit your tone quickly? Was there a dark period before the Tom Papa we know?
yeah, when you're starting out, you're not the best. You know, there's you can tell. Like I can even see now when I watch comics, like first coming into the club. It's you are funny, you know you're funny, there's something, you've got the guts to stand up there, but you don't have the material yet.
Right.
And there's some stuff, like, and when you're scared, or at least when I was scared, it was dirtier material because it worked, it was easy, and I didn't know how to write really great jokes yet. And it's almost like a, like, PTSD, like I block out some of those bad sets, but there's a vague, in the fog of my career, I remember standing on stage in front of a room full of people telling a very long joke about a long, ropey nipple.
A long, ropey nipple?
A long, ropey nipple, and I had it on the subway, and I was twirling it, and it wasn't my proudest moment.
Well, that's what makes, for you to get to where you are, and your material is so sharp and everything, you kind of have to just lay it out there and just keep honing it, because there's no way to get it as polished as we see it now. You know, with in your career, I'm saying the long run, really just putting yourself out there and having an end game in mind.
But that joke may have had more to it, because I can't wrap my mind around a ropey nipple.
Yeah, I think maybe you just hit on the name of my next special.
Yeah, long ropey nipple. It can be like a one of those lariat. Acts, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Tom, I love when established comedians talk about up-and-coming comedians and give them sort of their blessing. And I was watching highlights from a Mets game last year where Seinfeld was in the booth, and he talked about how much he really enjoyed the comedy of Mark Normand. And we've had Mark in the studio, and Mark is – I don't even know if he's up-and-coming anymore. He's established now, too. But to me, it's great to hear when somebody like Seinfeld says something great about somebody like Mark. I'm wondering if there's anybody in you know, that you've seen recently, or anybody coming up that has been impressing you.
No.
Yeah. No, they are honestly. All right. They're all.
Retract my question, and sorry for it being so long-winded.
You'd probably say they're all subpar, right?
Yeah.
No, there's great people. I can't believe how many. They just keep coming. Actually, it's just it is pretty remarkable.
It's got to be annoying.
Yeah, and it's totally annoying, and they've got so much energy.
They're free of families.
Mateo Lane is really funny in New York. Mm-hmm. Mateo Lane is really great comedian. Who else out there is really? Oh, this guy in L.A., Jesus Trejo, is okay. Really great comedian. He's a Mexican comedian. He also performs in Spanish, and it's just it's really a great time for stand up because people, unlike the early days when people would just get an act and they would just ride it to the death.
Yeah.
people are generating a lot of material because they're able to put it out without a gatekeeper, and more people are seeing it. So it's pushing everybody creatively to crank out more stuff. And, you know, more people are getting involved in it. So you're seeing the perspective of a whole bunch of different people. But it's still remarkable to me that with all these thousands of people and new voices and everyone that comes in, that I'm still the funniest.
Isn't it amazing?
We're not going to argue.
I'm amazed.
Yeah. I mean, that's like you're Kubrick, you know.
Hey, Tom, I wanted to ask about the show Baked on Food Network. You had a season. There's been one season so far. What's the prognosis on another one coming up?
It looks like we're not making any more. They just reran them on the Cooking Channel, so I don't know if they might be thinking about moving it.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I was saying this actually to a friend of mine who's a comedian, just like maybe 10 years younger than I am. He's like, why do you even care about getting something on TV? He goes, we can make our own stuff now.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. And I was like, yeah. I was like, it was like the old man like on the lawn, like, I have to have a... I need a network to like me. And I was like, oh, you know what? Screw it. So I just literally started my own YouTube series called Getting Baked with Tom.
Excellent.
And I'm just, because people are always asking me nonstop every day online about, you know, how do you make bread and how do you go about it? So I was like, well, I'm funny and people, I could do a better version of it than just somebody telling you straight how to make bread. So I started this Getting Baked with Tom, and I put it up on YouTube this week, and I think I'm just going to start making them, having guests, and it's like, yeah, why do I need the Food Network? You know, my 14-year-old daughter is making films. why am I waiting for a meeting?
Right. Well, I've said this, I'll say it, I put in the request every time, and when you are in town, you know, and I'm sure you get hit up for this all the time. Because if you follow Tom on Instagram, there are these glorious pictures of sourdough breads.
Yep.
We would not be opposed to you bringing one or two into town.
All right. When I come in March, I'll come in a day early and deliver the bread to you.
All right. Well, real quick, what is that? Is it a mother? What is that piece of the yeast that everything lives off of?
It's a sourdough starter. People call it a mother. People call it a starter. It's this active, gooey yeast. It's a living yeast, basically.
It's fascinating.
And, yeah, it really is fascinating. And you have to feed it flour and water to keep it alive. And when you're about to make bread, you scoop a little of it off, and you use that. And it's rather than using like dry yeast, which is active and will make bread, this has a deeper flavor to it.
Okay. Do you ever gift that to people?
I have given it to a couple people, but you have to really want – you have to really know what you're talking about to ask to meet me in an alleyway.
Well, no, because I think somebody like –
sandwich bag of goo.
Believe it or not, I wouldn't trust
like
any
– a bread Coke deal.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust anybody except for Preston with that. Preston is actually pretty handy around the kitchen, but, you know, if you're ever thinking about gifting, I think maybe gifting Preston with a piece of your mother.
Let's ask Tom for more stuff.
Well, no, I wanted to ask you if you're still involved with Prairie Home Companion at all.
I am. I'm actually going there on Saturday. It's, you know, it's called Live From Here now. And it's turned into a little more of a music show than a spoken word show. Oh. But I still do my monologue out in America every week that I'm on.
Okay.
And we don't have a cast anymore. They're not doing sketches, which is fine. I really like doing my monologue. And the sketch part took up a lot of my time. And I just handed in my second book. So I had a lot of writing to do throughout the year, so that we dialed back on the sketch part was pretty cool. Because I mean, writing the monologue takes over a week.
Yeah.
So, but I still love the show. It really is. It's really great. The music is just so insane at this point.
Well, that's the part I love. I love the music, and our girl Sarah Watkins, she just won a Grammy, did she not?
Yeah, amazing. That whole crew, and they're just, it's like just cool people to hang with, and then all of a sudden they're getting these awards, and they're just, you know, they're the best musicians in the country. And then you're just sitting backstage eating carrot sticks.
Carrot sticks, huh? It's like the old days of Zeppelin.
Hey, Tom, yeah, I saw this this text come in. You'll like this. It says, hey, guys, Tom Papa discussed bread the last time he was on your show, and it changed my life. Baking helped me through some really difficult times. It was a game changer.
Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing. I really I get that a lot.
Wow.
And it's really true. And, you know, my book is kind of it leaps off of what the special is about, which is You're Doing Great. And I do a whole chapter just on baking bread. And it really is this thing about there's something to it that doing something very simple, very methodically, and also it's nourishing and it fills the house with these bread smells. Mm. It's just like, and of course you can eat it and stuff your fat face with it at the end. Mm. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing but positivity that comes out of it. It's really, it takes over your mind because it's still difficult to do. I turned out two loaves last night that I was all cocky. I lift open the Dutch oven lid to show my family, and it was like a hockey puck. But that's good. There's something good to doing and failing, and I get that a lot. It changed my life too.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Who would have thunk? Bread,
yeah. Bread.
Wow. All right. Well, listen. Tom will be in town. The show is going to be at the Keswick Theater on March 7th. Tickets are available at keswicktheater.com. But of course, right now, you can go and see the special on Netflix. You're doing great, so make sure that you do check that out. Tom, you're one of our favorites, man. It's always great to talk to you. Thanks for coming on.
Likewise. I'll see you next month.
You got it. All right, Tom. My mouth is watering a little bit.
Oh, my God.
Sourdough bread.
Look at these. There's a picture of him on the screen here in the studio, and he does it all the time on Instagram, and he'll show one in particular. And I'm fascinated with that, and I could see where that is like a total Zen thing, you know?
Yeah.
Here's the rub, guys. He said he's going to come in a day before a show.
We're at the Cardboard Classic.
Do you think he could come?
I don't know.
To Jack Frost? I mean, if he's coming from New York.
How well does bread travel?
Well, I mean,
he's not
actually
coming from New York. He's based in L.A. now, is he not?
I don't know.
No.
Let's find out. Let's see if we can make that happen. It'd be really cool to have him.
I think he would dig it.
At the Cardboard Classic. I think he would love that. I think you're absolutely right.
More podcasts from Preston and Steve available at PrestonandSteve.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.